invitation to the organizer and also giving me a chance to listen to many interesting talks. So I want to discuss the structure of the Picard scheme. And before I discuss the structure of the Picard scheme, let me just recall for you to... I can make it high. Better? No. Okay. I can speak with a loud voice. So let me just recall what the Picard scheme is. So let's say just for simplicity that today we take X proper over a perfect field. So we have X over K. Let me put this like this. And then we look at the category of schemes over K. So let T be any scheme over K. And look at the fiber product. And we ask ourselves if we can we represent the functor T goes to the Picard group of X cross T. And the answer is, of course, no. And the reason is that you can easily show that whenever you can represent a functor, then it's automatically a sheaf for the flat topology, in particular for the Itard topology, in particular for the Zariski topology. So one thing you notice that if you have a line bundle on T, then it becomes trivial Zariski locally. So if this is a sheaf for the Zariski topology, everything which comes from T must automatically vanish. So in order to get something reasonable, we have to divide out by what comes from the Picard group of T, because everything that becomes Zariski locally trivial, and so you cannot detect it. Another way is of viewing this is saying that this has to be what, if it's representable, it has to be an Itard sheaf. So then we say we sheafified for the Itard topology. So we take essentially, recall that pick of X is H1 X Itard of GM. So if you sheafified for the Itard topology, it's just saying that this agrees with, that's the sheafification of this, if this is the map F. So you can ask yourself, can you represent this functor? And in fact, if X has a rational point, these two things are equal. If X has a K rational point, which you can easily verify by looking at the Hochschild-Serre spectral sequence for this R gamma and RF lower star. So that's easy to see. So we're asking ourselves, is this representable? And keeping in mind that typically this is the same as this. And so then there's a theorem by Grothendieck and Mirra. Of course, they proved a much more general result, but in our situation, it says that so if you have a proper scheme over a perfect field, that the functor pick X, so this functor pick X, is representable. And so you get a group scheme, and you look at the connected component. We all know that the quotient by this by the connected component is called Nero-Silvery group, and that this is finitely generated. And the connected component is separated and of finite type. So now let's look at this with a reduced structure. So there's a quotient of these two, which is a nilpotent group scheme, which I don't want to bother about, which only occurs in characteristic P, and I don't want to study this. So I just want to look at this. And you might be used to the fact that this is an abelian variety, but this is not an abelian variety in general. But rather, we have the following theorem of Grothendieck, which says that if X is normal, then this is proper. So in particular, it's the reduced part of it is an abelian variety. So that's why you're probably used to the fact that this pig is an abelian variety. But in general, this is not the case. So in general, what do you have? You have a groove scheme which is smooth. So then you know by Chevalier that if you take such a groove scheme, then it's an extension by an abelian variety and an affine group. This is abelian variety, and this is affine. And moreover, because we're over a perfect field, an affine group decomposes into a unipotent group and a torus. And so the question arises, if X is not normal, so if there is something, what does this look like? And much to my surprise, I couldn't find anything in the literature about it. Basically, people were writing many papers of when this functor is representable, but they never really studied how it looks like. So I will focus in my talk on the torus part, because we want to talk about the A1 theory, and if you take the unipotent part and make it homotopy invariant, it disappears. So I'm not allowed to talk about this at this conference. So we have the following theorem. I can completely characterize the torus in terms of X. Namely, the theorem is that if you look at the co-character module over the algebraic closure, so it's a homomorphism from GM to the torus. You can completely reconstruct the torus from this information. This is canonically isomorphic to the first Ital cohomology of X with Z coefficients as Galois modules. So before I prove it, let me give you the two simplest examples. Look at a node. Okay, let's say over an algebraically closed field, we get that H1 of the node is Z, and this implies that the torus is just a multiplicative group. Now let's take over K, which is not algebraically closed, a node so that the tangent directions are not rational. A node such that tangents are not rational. Then we get the same Z here, but the Galois group X by minus 1. So we get that the Galois group X by minus 1. And so this implies that the torus is an anisotropic form of GM, which I call S1. So this is just an example that you can completely recover the torus just from knowing its first Ital cohomology group with Z coefficients. Okay, so then let me prove this theorem. So the idea is as follows. First, we reduce to K is algebraically closed, just saying that everything which we study is compatible with the Galois action. Then we reduce to reduced. Because it's easy to see that both sides do not change if we take X with the reduced structure. So this is well known for Itard cohomology with constant coefficients. And for the Picard scheme, this is basically the thesis of Franz Oort. So this is known for 40 years. That if you compare the Picard scheme of X and the Picard scheme of X bar, of the reduced X, then this differs just by unipotent group schemes. So, and he even makes precise how they look like. So then, I should also note that, so here we have homomorphisms of group schemes, and by Yoneda, this is the homomorphisms of, so we have k equals k bar, of Itard sheaves on the big side of k. Okay, from now on, I will always think about the Itard sheaves on the big side. That's just by Yoneda's lemma of the sheaf represented by this. And moreover, there's no maps from GM to either a unipotent group or to an abelian variety. So that's the same as the homomorphisms of... so now I look at the sheaves. Homomorphisms from GM to pick 0 reduced. But this is again the same as the homomorphisms from, because GM is connected and smooth, the homomorphisms to the whole of PIC agree with the homomorphism to the reduced connected component. And this, because I talk about sheaves, looking back at this, this is just the same as hom PIC represents the sheaf R1 P lower star GM, where P is the map from X to K. So I just have to calculate this instead, if I want to know this. Because essentially, GM has nothing to do with the abelian varieties and unipotent groups. Okay, so then, how do I compare this? First, I construct a map by a so R gamma of G etal with Z coefficient is the same as R hom etal from Z to R P lower star of Z. It's just that global sections are the same as homomorphisms from Z. And now I tensor with GM. So I get R hom from GM to here, and now I take the cup product in the second variable, so I get R hom GM R P lower star GM, and the map is induced by what this does on the first cohomology. So I get H1 X etal Z goes to H1 R hom GM R P lower star of GM. That's not quite what I want. But if I look at the Lyoelle spectral sequence for the composition of these two functors, then I get something like this. X1 GM P lower star of GM goes to here, goes to hom GM of R1 P lower star GM. That's what I want. And then next term is X2 GM P lower star of GM. So if I call this map alpha, this map beta, and this delta, then what I have to show, what I want to show is that the first term vanishes. Secondly, I want to show that alpha is an isomorphism. And thirdly, I want to show that delta is zero, and then I'm done. So let me start with the first step. And to prove the first step, we have the following key lemma. Let C be a smooth affine group scheme. I will need this in step three again. Then the extensions of C by M are trivial. For the entire topology on over an algebraically closed field. And the proof is as follows. Because I'm over an algebraically closed field and C is smooth and affine, and of course everything is commutative here. So everything's commutative. So because we're in this situation, C has a filtration consisting of multiplicative groups and additive groups. And now I look at the cohomology of this. So I have H1 of GM. Now GM is just it's not a group scheme, it's just a scheme. So it's an affine line without one point. With GM coefficients, it's the same as Picard of GM of an algebraically closed field, and that's trivial. Moreover, I have the entire topology of the affine line minus one point is basically, as we all know, the same as the Zariski topology of the affine line without one point of the structure sheaf, and this is affine. There's no higher cohomology of an affine scheme with quasi-coherent coefficients. This is also zero. So because we have this filtration, we can conclude that H1 GM with C coefficients is trivial. Now let's assume we are given a extension. So, the X with the H1. No, that's the proof is not finished yet. So given an extension, let's see. So given such an extension, C goes to E, goes to GM. I look at, so this is always etage sheaves on the big side. So take sections over GM. Then I get E of GM goes to GM of GM, goes to H1 of GM with C coefficients. But I just convinced you hopefully that this is zero. So we have the identity here. So I can find an element which maps to the identity. And so now I define a section from GM to E by, if I'm given the element GM of T, I want to send it to an element of E of T. So if I have an element here, that's just the map from T to GM, and I send it to S upper star of eta. So that's an element in E is eta is from GM to E, so I put it back, it's from T to E. So I get this element. And it's not so hard to, it's very easy to show, basically using the definition of functoriality, that this is a section. So I've used this property to show that whenever you have an extension, it has a section, it's trivial. So that's proves the key lemma. And now, to finish the proof of part one, I have just to convince you that P lower star of GM satisfies the condition of this key lemma. So that's another lemma. P lower star of GM is smooth. It's a smooth affine group scheme. And proof, I don't know if there's an easier proof in the literature, I just tried to find one myself because I couldn't find one in the literature, but probably this is well known. So I used the Stein factorization. So I have x goes to k. And this is finite. And of course, because we're over a field, this is also flat. And we have P prime lower star of OX is OT. And this, of course, implies that P lower star of GM on X is GM not T. So we can assume that we're in this situation. We can as well consider this map, F, instead of the other one, because what we get here is the same. And so if we do that, then we're in a situation where C is finite and flat. And then in this case, you know that P star of GM is So in this case, open subsets are preserved under these weight restrictions. So because this is open, we get that this is also open, but the P lower star of A1 is just AM, where M is the degree of P. That's an easy verification. So this is an open subset of AM, so it's smooth and affine. So this lemma shows that the hypothesis of the key lemma is satisfied, and so then we can conclude that this is done. Now before I go on to step two, I'd like to note that the key lemma is pretty subtle. For example, it's not true if the base field is not algebraically closed. So this is a counterexample. That you have to be careful. If K is R, then let S be the anisotropic torus, as above. And then this is, of course, smooth and affine. And then you see that the extensions of GM by S1 are isomorphic to Z2. And this is generated by the weight restriction of GM. And, of course, the proof breaks down because C doesn't have a filtration consisting of GM of GA, and we have H1 of GM with S1 coefficient Z mod 2. So that's where the proof breaks down. So you have to be careful. So now let's move on to...
Is this the basis of
Yeah, that's how I found it. So now let's go on to step two. I want to show that this is an isomorphism, and I have to use this already. So Here the idea is to reduce to the normal case and use Grotnik's theorem. So what happens if X is normal? Then first we know that H1 of the Etal cohomology with Z coefficient is zero, because the normality implies that if eta is the generic point, then J star of Z eta is the X, and so then you get the H1 of X eta Z, which is the same as H1 X eta J lower star of Z by the Lyrae spectral sequence goes to H1, the Galois cohomology of eta, which is the homomorphisms from the Galois group to Z, which of course is trivial. So this is well known for a long time. On the other hand, by Grothendieck theorem, which I was writing down in the beginning, we have that HOM GM R1 that this is zero. And now, using step one, I get that this is also zero. So if X is normal, then our theorem is correct. In general, that we do induction on dimension. So we take X prime in normalization. We take a conductor square. So then we take Z, the closed subset, where this is not an isomorphism. And this is Cartesian. So Cartesian. So Z is a subset where F is not an isomorphism. And we have that the dimension of Z is the dimension of Z prime is smaller than the dimension of X. Okay. Generically normal. Well, we have a. I don't have a reference, but we have a scheme over a perfect field of finite type. I think it's well known that this is generically normal. In fact, it's generically smooth. Yes. Yeah, that's what I did in the beginning. Well, the statement for X and for X reduced is the same. That's why I can always assume that X is reduced. So even though Z prime is not reduced, I can assume that the statement is correct for Z prime, because the statement for Z prime and Z prime reduced are equivalent. So now I have the situation, and I want to compare these four things. So I look at first I have a short exact sequence like this, where D is the diagonal in this diagram, so it's a map from Z prime to X. So this is exact. This is because the map from X prime to X is finite. It's kind of the proper Bayesian theorem for finite maps. And I was checking at which point you can use what topologies. So everywhere I can use the Nisnevich et al. Flat topology, but I cannot use the Zariski topology because this breaks down for the Zariski topology. So then we also have a similar sequence for GM. GMX, GM. This is basically exact because if you look at stalks, if you look at the local ring, then the next term would be an H, basically a pick, and pick of a local ring is trivial. So that's why this is exact sequence of sheaves. And now I look at the corresponding long exact sequences. So I apply R gamma X on the first row and R hom GM R pilota on second row. So here's the term which interests me, H1 X et al. Z, which maps to H1 R hom GM R P lower star of GM. The next term is I get, I can forget this result for X prime because X prime is normal and for normal things nothing happens. And so I can save the space of writing it. So I get H1 X et al. Z et al. With Z coefficients, and here I get the same thing for Z. And here I would get the same for Z prime. And on the other hand, I here get H0 Z prime et al. With Z coefficients, and here I get H0, so I get a hom to Pilo star, so I get hom GM P lower star D lower star GM, and so now same for Z and X prime here, and so it's easy to check that this is an isomorphism. It's also easy to check that this is an isomorphism. This is an isomorphism by induction on the dimension. So I see that this is also an isomorphism, which finishes step two. So we have this. This is an isomorphism. And finally, I have to show that the map delta is trivial. In general that the X2 is 0, so you have to work a little bit harder. You cannot show that the X2 is 0, you have to show that the map delta is trivial. So now look at but the proof is a little bit similar to step number 2. So I have what do I have? So I have H1 R hom GM this is injective goes to on the part I'm interested in, and this goes to X2 GM P star of GM. I want to show that this is trivial. So now I look at the same situation for z and x prime. So for z, we get r1, p lower star, I lower star, the multiplicative group of z. And there's nothing for x prime, so I can just forget about it. And so the next term is, if I look at the situation for x prime and for z, I get this part plus x2 gm p lower star f lower star of the x prime situation. Okay, so I want to show that this map is zero, but I already know that by induction that this is an isomorphism. By induction on the dimension. This is an isomorphism, so this is the zero map. So if I look at this diagram, I want to show that this is zero. It suffices to show that this is injective. So show that this map is injective. So now I look at this short object sequence and I apply p lower star. I get p lower star of gm. I get p lower star I lower star of gm z plus p lower star f lower star gm of x prime. And of course, this does not project onto p lower star of d lower star, but I just take the co-kernel. So I get such a short object sequence, and C is a quotient of a smooth affine groove scheme, so it's smooth and affine. And so by the key lemma, I get that x1 of gm with c coefficient is 0. So I get a 0 here, so this map is injective. So I'm done. So this finishes the proof of the theorem. So let me put this a little bit into context before I talk about you. Because we're at a K-theory conference, or homotopy theory conference of schemes, let me a little bit connect to Chuck's talk. So we have n pick of x was the quotient of pick of x cos a1 and pick x. And then we know that basically by Chuck's work, that if you take gm over x, then this can be written as one copy of pick plus one copy of n pick plus another copy of n pick plus something which is basically by definition the remaining term. So what you show is that there is a Meyer Vectoris long exact sequence, and this long exact sequence splits, and so this is the remaining term. And then, amusingly, Chuck also showed that this is the Itard cohomology with z coefficients. So L-pick is strongly related to the torus of the Picard scheme. And now, of course, you can ask yourself, is there a relationship between n-pick and the unipotent part? And I found a little bit of a connection. So look at the unipotent part. First of all, again, I want to How about? Ux. So we saw, because the torus only depended on h1x with z coefficient, it's basically entirely dependent on the geometry of x, but not on the structure sheaf. I mean, you can change the structure sheaf if you have the same topological space. You basically get the same torus. Whereas for the unipotent part, it's the opposite. I can find another scheme which is universally homeomorphic to x, which has vanishing ux. So I'm going to show you how to do that. So first of all, I want to assume that x is reduced, and that's again because Oort described the kernel and the co-kernel of pick x to pick x reduced. They're both unipotent and have an explicit description. But I want to assume from now on that that x is reduced. So in this case, I showed the following proposition. There's a short exact sequence from ux to ux of a1 to n pick of x. So this is why this connection is a little bit strange, because n pick is huge. And in order to get something huge, you have to take ux of a1. So it's basically all the affine lines in affine space. But the important consequence of this is, by a result of essentially traverso and a little bit of Weibull, we know that if x is semi-normal, I will explain this in a second, then n pick of x is 0. But if n pick of x is 0, then because ux automatically consists at least one copy of ga, if these two things are equal, then u has to be trivial. If u is non-trivial, then this is automatically bigger than this. This implies that ux is 0. So that's why I wanted to make this connection to n pick. Now let me explain. Let me explain what the semi-normalization is. Of course, most of you know it, but let this be a normalization of x. Then it lies between x and the normalization, and is given by the largest scheme between x prime and x and the normalization. So it's basically universal scheme between x prime and x, such that for all points x in x, there is exactly one x prime in the semi-normalization. So if I call this map F, which maps to this, so it's a bijection, and moreover, the function fields are isomorphic. Of course, this is not a CDH cover, because this map is not flat typically. But for example, if you take the cusp, then this is a semi-normalization. Because it has to be etale to be a CDH cover. This is not etale. Yeah, but it's not etale. Okay. I was thinking something else. So So here we have the normalization, which is also this. So for the cusp bit, you just get the affine line, which has the same topological space universally, but it has a different structure sheaf. Whereas if you take a node, then the semi-normalization is still the node. Just to give you some idea. So we saw that a semi-normal scheme, of course you say that a scheme is semi-normal if it's its own semi-normalization. And you can show that if you take the semi-normalization of a scheme, then if you do it again, you get the same scheme. So, So if the scheme is semi-normal, then I know it doesn't have a unipotent group part. And so then you show the following theorem, that there is a short exact sequence. Ux is exactly the kernel from pick X to the semi-normalization of pick. So this has the same topological space, the semi-normalization, and it has no unipotent part, and the unipotent part is exactly what vanishes here. So in other words, nothing else vanishes. Every other part of the Picard scheme is preserved. Secondly, Ux represents the functor T goes to Ox cross T line bundles inside of the semi-normalization, which are invertible inside. This. So it's kind of a smaller group than all of PIC. All of PIC, if the scheme is integral, would be the line bundles inside of the X, T cross the function field of X, which are invertible in T cross the function field of X. So it's kind of a fractional idea in something which is a little bit smaller. So in order to prove this, we know that we have a short exact sequence of a GM of X goes to GM the semi-normalization. So I don't write the map between X and XFN. I should write F lower star, but this is the same topological space. So it's sheaves on the same topological space. And you have a cocoin. So then you get 0 goes to P was the structure map of X, GMX goes to GMX semi-normalization, goes to P lower star C, goes to essentially what is PIC of X, goes to essentially what is PIC of the semi-normalization, and goes to here. And now this theorem is equivalent to the following statement, which is the proposition. This is an isomorphism, part one. This is unipotent, smooth, affine. That's step two. So that gives you the U, because the U is the kernel. And finally, this is zero. That's what you have to show. And this is again by induction on dimension. Etc. So I don't want to spend much time on this. because I only want to show you the pretty parts of the proof. I don't show you the ugly parts. And finally, to look at the second statement. So let me call this a S of t by definition. So then I get, of course, I get a map S of t pick x, so the pick to the semi-normalization of t. So I want to, so this of course is the map. This is an OXT line bundle inside of whatever. So I just forget that it's lying inside of there. I just view it as an OXT line bundle. So, oh yeah. First reduce to showing that. So. Sorry. Reduce to calculate the kernel of pick x cross t goes to pick x semi-normalization cross t. Because this is not so far away from pick x of t and from pick x semi-normalization of t. I was trying to convince you before that this is the same as pick x cross t modulo pick of t, and this is pick x as x as n cross t mod pick of x. So the pick of x kind of cancel, and you can show with not too much work that the two kernels are equal. So then I'm in the situation where I just have to look at this here. So here I just send an OXT line bundle with some extra information to an OXT line bundle. Let me call this map F. Let me call this the pullback along this this map which I called F before. So let me call this F upper star. And let me call this T and not try to use my notes to confuse the S and T. So I want to show it suffices to prove three things. That if I take the composition, I get zero. Secondly, I want to show that T projects onto kernel of F star, and thirdly, I have to show that T is injective. So first I have to show that if I take such a line bundle, view it as line bundle, and then pull it back to the semi-normalization, it becomes trivial. So I have to show that if I have such a line bundle in ST, then L tensor O X cross T O X semi-normalization cross T is isomorphic to OX semi-normalization cross T. But to check isomorphism of line bundles, I can do it on an affine cover. So check on an affine cover, and then this is a result of Leslie Roberts and thing. So secondly, so let's assume I have something in the kernel. So let's assume that L tensor OX cross T OX as N cross T is isomorphic to A OX cross T. Then by a flatness of L. First I get an injection of L into OXSN. So we have L is isomorphic to L tensor O X cross T O X cross T, which by flatness injects into O X cross T O X S N cross T, and this by hypothesis was isomorphic to O X cross T. So I already know it's inside of there. Now I just have to show it's also invertible inside of there. So let me write down explicitly an inverse. So let L prime sending the thing which sends U to all the element in OXSN, so that X times L of U, which are now to be sitting inside of here, is contained in the smaller thing. So just like playing with fractional ideas. So this of course is contained in OXN cross T of U, and I can check that L tensor O X cross T L prime is O X cross T on an affine cover. And then again, it's a paper of Robert and Singh. So thirdly, T's injective means that I have, if I have two things in there which are abstractly isomorphic as line bundles, then they're already equal inside of there. So let's assume I have two of these guys. Invertible inside of there. Which are isomorphic as abstract line bundles. Then if I tensor with the inverse of one of them, I can assume that one of them is just a O X cross T. And so I'm in a situation where I have a line bundle in here, which is abstractly isomorphic to O X of T. Then I have to show that L is actually equal to O X cross T inside of the semi-normalization. But if this isomorphism is given by alpha, then alpha of 1 is, which direction should I say, is a global unit, global section, global invertible section, so global unit on xn sn cross t. And now I use this statement. Which comes from a global section, global unit of X cross T, And so I just have to invert this global section. And so then L, which is F of 1 inverse times L, which is isomorphic to OX cross T. So kind of I invert this, I take the, this isomorphism is given by sending a, L is generated by alpha of 1, but it's a global unit in X cross T. Xn is n cross T, but this is the same as the global unit of X cross T, and then I can just invert this and I know that it's the same as OX cross T. And my time is up and I'm done. Invertible. But the inverse is not, it's lying inside of this. So you should think of this, so you have X, the structure sheaf of X, and the structure sheaf of is in here, and this is inside of the function field. And so you have normally the L. That was this one? In two. That's the hypothesis, that the kernel of F star. The hypothesis that is that you have an element in the kernel of F star, which means if you tensor up. No. Yeah. So you have L lives inside here and L inverse also lives inside of here.